Good morning. It's April 4th and this is your daily brief in Australia News. Here's everything you need to know. In a pivotal moment for Victoria, Australia, the Allan government has taken a cautious step in responding to a groundbreaking report from the Yuruk Justice Commission, which calls for significant reforms in child protection, justice, and police oversight. This move has sparked a mix of support and disappointment, underscoring the complex path towards justice and equality for First Peoples. The government has agreed in principle to support 24 recommendations from the Commission's first report. However, it has drawn lines by rejecting three key recommendations: raising the age of criminal responsibility, reforming bail laws, and enabling the pursuit of human rights abuses through the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal. This selective endorsement has led to a pushback on some of the report's most ambitious reforms, earmarking them for further analysis or integration into the state's ongoing treaty negotiations. Professor Eleanor Bourke, chair of the Yuruk Justice Commission, expressed disappointment over the government's refusal to back these critical recommendations. This stance highlights the enduring struggle against injustice faced by First Peoples. Additionally, the government's rejection of a proposal to amend the state's Human Rights Charter, despite legislating changes to the adult bail system, adds another layer to the discourse on justice and human rights in Victoria. In a phased approach, the government intends to raise the age of criminal responsibility to 14 by 2027, beginning with an increment to 12 by the end of this year. This decision, while a step forward, falls short of the Commission's call for immediate action. Treaty and First Peoples Minister Natalie Hutchins emphasised the centrality of treaty and truth, led by Aboriginal people, as a means to drive improved outcomes and bridge disparities. As the year progresses, additional accountability hearings are expected to provide updates on the implementation of the Commission's recommendations. These sessions will be crucial in holding the government accountable and ensuring that the path towards justice and equality for First Peoples in Victoria remains a priority. In the heat of an Australian summer, a new report sheds light on a pressing issue: the high cost of staying cool. The Sweltering Cities Summer Survey report has unveiled the extensive impact of air conditioning costs on Australians, sparking a conversation on the need for change, particularly in Queensland. The survey reveals a worrying trend. 68% of respondents report feeling unwell on hot days, a discomfort that intensifies among renters, individuals with chronic illnesses, and people with disabilities. In Queensland, renters faced a harsh reality last summer, enduring median indoor temperatures above 28.2 degrees Celsius 50% of the time. This has raised significant concerns about the physical and mental well-being of a substantial portion of the population. Despite 78% of respondents owning air conditioning units, a staggering 65% are hesitant to use them due to the prohibitive costs involved. This reluctance underscores a broader issue affecting Australians' health and comfort. Advocacy group Better Renting is stepping up, urging the Queensland government to implement minimum rental standards related to energy performance. Such measures could offer much-needed relief. Medical professionals, including Geelong GP Jenny Huang, are advocating for cooling minimum standards in rental properties. They highlight the severe consequences of excessive heat, which can exacerbate medical conditions and even contribute to increased domestic violence. Associate Professor Lirian Daniel further emphasises the inadequacy of Australia's housing stock in coping with the climate, especially for vulnerable groups. This problem, Daniel warns, is only set to worsen with climate change. The report and subsequent calls to action highlight a critical intersection of health, housing, and climate policy. As the cost of living crisis continues to bite, the need for sustainable solutions to ensure Australians can stay cool and healthy in their homes has never been more urgent. In a tragic incident that has sparked international outrage, the family of Australian aid worker Zomi Frankcom is calling for a thorough investigation into her death, potentially involving war crimes charges. This comes after the Israeli military's actions resulted in her untimely demise, with Prime Minister Anthony Albanese leading the charge for accountability from the Israeli government. The heart of the controversy lies in the Israeli military's explanation that the convoy carrying Zomi Frankcom and other aid workers was struck due to misidentification. This explanation has not been accepted by Frankcom's family or Australian officials, who are demanding a more thorough inquiry into the circumstances of her death. The incident has not only drawn the attention of the Australian government, but has also caught the eye of the International Criminal Court and global observers, signalling the gravity of the situation. Amidst calls for accountability, Foreign Minister Penny Wong is contemplating imposing sanctions on Israel pending the results of the ongoing investigation. Meanwhile, opposition leader Peter Dutton has called on Hamas to release hostages in a bid to facilitate a ceasefire in Gaza, highlighting the broader geopolitical implications of the tragedy. Israel's top representative in Australia has assured a comprehensive investigation into the incident, a move that is being closely watched by the international community. In a significant shift for environmental and cultural heritage management in Australia, Rio Tinto, the global mining giant, has stepped in to take over the rehabilitation of the closed Ranger uranium mine, situated on the edge of the iconic Kakadu National Park. This move comes amid escalating costs and delays, with the project's completion now not expected until after 2028, and the budget ballooning to over $2.2 billion. The Ranger mine, a source of contention due to its location near Kakadu National Park, has seen its rehabilitation efforts mired in disputes and financial overruns. The tension between Rio Tinto and Energy Resources of Australia, ERA, reached a point where Rio Tinto called for the resignation of ERA's chairman, highlighting the gravity of the situation. Rio Tinto's decision to take the reins is not just about solving the immediate issues at hand. It's also a part of a broader strategy to mend its reputation following the destruction of the Juukan Gorge rock shelters, a debacle that drew international condemnation and highlighted the need for mining companies to adopt more respectful approaches to cultural heritage. The Mirar traditional owners, longtime opponents of mining near their lands, have expressed a mix of relief and disappointment. They welcome Rio Tinto's involvement in the Ranger mine rehabilitation, but remain concerned about ERA's continued management of the Jabiluka mineral lease, a site of significant cultural importance. Conservationists, while cautious, are somewhat reassured by Rio Tinto's commitment. They recognize the company's global expertise and financial capacity as potentially beneficial for the rehabilitation process. Meanwhile, the situation underscores the complex dynamics of Australia's role in the global uranium market. Despite a domestic ban on nuclear energy, the country is a pivotal uranium supplier, a fact that continues to fuel debate over its nuclear policies. In taking over the Ranger Rehabilitation Project, Rio Tinto, which owns 86.3% of ERA's shares, signals a potentially new era of environmental stewardship and cultural sensitivity in the mining sector. This step, while addressing the immediate challenges of the Ranger mine, also reflects broader questions about resource extraction, Indigenous rights, and environmental conservation in Australia and beyond. A decade after the tragic loss of her son, Rosie Batty stands at the forefront of a critical battle against family violence in Australia, a reminder that the fight is far from over. Batty, a figure synonymous with advocacy against family violence, marks the 10th anniversary of her son's murder by highlighting an uncomfortable truth: the persistent and alarming rate of violence against women in the country, with 64 women falling victim last year alone. Rosie Batty's journey from a grieving mother to a national voice against domestic abuse underscores the multifaceted nature of this violence. She brings attention to the subtle and overt forms of abuse and control, emphasizing that such behaviors aren't limited to the shadows, but can also emanate from individuals in positions of influence. Despite years of campaigning and the outcomes of a royal commission aimed at tackling this issue, the statistics remain stark. In her ongoing mission, Batty shines a light on a critical aspect of the conversation: the gender of the perpetrators. With over 94% being men, she calls for a cultural shift in how society views masculinity and the expectations placed on boys and men. This includes advocating for programs in schools that promote respectful relationships and open dialogues with young people about these issues. Despite facing resistance and pushback, Batty's resolve is unwavering. She remains hopeful, buoyed by the belief in the power of early intervention and the role of young people in driving change. Her message is clear: to break the cycle of violence, society must engage with its youth, fostering environments where respect and equality are non-negotiable values. This has been your Daily Brief in Australia News. To read more about these stories, follow the links in the episode bio. You can also subscribe to these updates via email at www.brief.news. For more daily podcasts about the topics you love, visit brief.news/podcasts. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be back with everything you need to know.